Hello and welcome to Europa United's Christmas podcast. We thought we'd put some Christmas music up this time. My name is Ken Sereny and with me is the entire Europa United team. I have Francis Cowell all the way from Paris, Brian Milne from the not-so-at-the-moment south of France and not-so-warm south of France, and Stella Bass from my old hometown of Dublin. Hi guys, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, yes, hi. Happy Christmas, happy Christmas.
Well, we just let that music play on a little bit just to put us all in a bit of a festive mood because it's been an absolutely miserable year. Now, my three-year-old and my seven-year-old daughter picked that music out, so I'm not going to go down that road. It's been a year for the history books, there's no doubt about that. And while, of course, we cannot escape the inevitable discussion on a certain health situation that started around February, we are going to try and review this year and take a look at what else has been making the news in 2020, because believe it or not, quite a bit did happen, actually. But before we get cracking, we are going to have a little chat about our own organisation and basically non-profit organisations in general this year. And we're going to let you know what our plans are for 2020. Now, 2020 took no prisoners when it came to the volunteer sector, and unfortunately Europa United didn't escape the problems, which included lack of funding and, of course, drop-off in activity. We saw a number of volunteers forcing themselves to push back from their work, but nonetheless, we have managed to stay in the field while a good few have fallen. Next year, we'll see a leaner version, we hope, of Europa United, with the focus on our already establishing our podcasting, and also with an emphasis on a more regular publishing of articles and writings in bulk form. Francis, it has been a difficult year for us. I mean, you've been kind of watching the finances and going down the road of kind of getting grant aid and that kind of thing. It's been hard for not just us, it's been hard for everyone really, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. So we shouldn't feel singled out or special in any particular way. But we did quite well. I still think we did quite well under the circumstances. We had some great podcast series, thanks to Ken. And we're going to build on that and do even more next year. We're really looking forward to that. Ken, run us through our podcast.
Well, look, I mean, I think the podcasting is kind of a lifeline to people out there because it tells organizations that we exist for a start. It also keeps us, you know, on the road. It gets us a chance to talk to people. And of course, once you have the equipment, it's free. You know, it's free to do. It's really the kind of what I think it's like, kind of the new pirate radio. And it's there for people to kind of clue in at any time they want. So I really think it's a good thing to work on next year. I'm going to throw, you know, a lot in with it next year and hopefully come up with a new couple of different ideas, maybe a couple of one-off projects. And we won't say anything about it, but we're already working on them already. And, you know, people like myself and Stella, well, we're kind of almost veterans now at this point, Stella, although we've had so many problems and so many hiccups and so many, let's start again with that podcast. But, you know,
but the show must go on.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, I love doing the podcasting. And you know what, Stella, we've done some really good ones, haven't we? I mean, the Euroscience one was great fun, wasn't it?
That really was. That really, really was with Daniel from Daniel and Jorge. That was so interesting. It was such fun. We had a good year. We had a good year. We talked to some interesting people, and
we had Samantha
Cristoforetti,
of course.
Bring the same and more.
We had our own our very own astronaut, which was, I thought, was a great coup for us because everyone said we weren't going to get that.
That's it. She was really, really interesting. Great stories to tell. So, more of the same next year and more and better. Let's keep going the way we're going, I think.
Yeah, I think we kind of tried that one out to see how it'd go, and I think it was a bit of a success. So, you know, we might just go with something a little bit more special. So, Francis, I mean, at the end of the day, I think it's going to be kind of just, you have to go for leaner, kind of meaner projects, isn't it?
I think the catchphrase here is focused. And so what we're going to do is a lot more of what we know we do really well, and podcasts are in there. And we've had some really good articles and some pretty good activity on our social media too. But we're going to focus on the things that we think we've done particularly well, and people have said we've done very well just by liking us a lot. So we're looking forward to that. I mean, there's a lot to look forward to in 2021.
Brian, I wanted to come back to you on something because you've gone down this road of working for NGOs over the last couple of years, and I won't say decades because I'm not going to be that bad, but
It was
you've gone down that
decades.
road. So, I mean, is it normal to go in peaks and troughs where organizations fall by the wayside and some are tougher? Is there any tips that we need to keep an eye on in that respect?
Yeah, it's a good question. There are peaks and troughs, and I'll tell you, some of the troughs are scary. The peaks are never impressive. That's the problem. But tips, well, no, you just struggle through. And I think, no, I mean, I have put some decades in there, and I've seen NGOs go broke that were very successful and very big. So I think Francis has said it as well. You kind of sweat it through.
Yeah, is the key to adapt as well?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we can look at that. I mean, look, we're not going to dwell on this because, like, it's up to us, I suppose, in 2021 to get the ball rolling and keep people interested in what we do. And of course, to keep our messages strong, because that's it. That's what we're doing at the end of the day. We are out there to help people to have an option to have an open dialogue and to be able to use our platform to communicate to other Europeans. So, I mean, that's something we have to stay on top with. So look, we're going to get cracking on the topics we're going to discuss today. I suppose, look, we have to ask, 2020, how did you guys cope with 2020? I mean, was it a difficult year? I mean, we won't go into too much detail, but I mean, I suppose the isolation was a big thing, wasn't it? I'll start with you, Stella, because you are a single lady, so you're living in one of the busiest and most say vibrant cities in Europe, in Dublin. So what was it like living in the middle of the city during lockdown?
It was, I, to be honest with you, I think the biggest struggle I had was in terms of work, because I'm a freelancer in music, and that sector just overnight disappeared. So I sort of went from A, having my livelihood completely decimated, my diary just cleared out, bit by bit by bit, and anytime there was sort of some chinks of light after a lockdown or so forth, it soon disappeared. So I've done very, very little work. Not for the want of trying, it's simply that there aren't venues and theatres and so forth open. So that has been tough. But on the plus side of that, I've used it as an opportunity to try and pivot into doing some more things. So I've been doing quite a bit of songwriting. I've been linking up with various people in the States for things all online, because the whole online way of communicating and working has exploded. So that is a positive in all this darkness of the year. But I use darkness in a sort of a lighter term, not in a heavy, heavy, heavy sense. But yeah, so I'm going into next year optimistic, only because I've had to change my way of working. So it was tough to deal with, because, as I said, I've been working freelance for sort of 15 odd years, and so forth. And, you do get comfortable, because I suppose I'm constantly working and so forth. So it was a wake-up call to show, A, the vulnerability of working as a freelancer, but B, also to see the opportunities that something like this that it took something like this to open my eyes to. So you can sort of loosely see it as a positive, just of different ways of working. And so, yeah, so I'm optimistic as to what next year brings. But yes, I would very much like to get out and about, but we'll do it, in my opinion anyway, in the right time, in the right way, and we sort of hold tight until then. We're nearly at the end of the line in some shape or form, I'm hopeful of.
Brian, you're in the opposite thing. You're in the wilderness there in the south of France. So you were probably used to a little bit of isolation. Did anything really major change during, say, the various lockdowns that happened in France?
Almost no difference. We stockpiled stuff into our cellar
Right.
and then
For, I,
realized that we
to, take,
didn't.
I take you got stockpiled the wine.
I don't drink the stuff.
The wine and the cheese.
I drink Vichy water. We even stockpiled that. But we fell into the trap, like half the world, of stockpiling toilet paper, which we could use as beds today. So.
But nothing really changed for you in a sense of, to say, the overall kind of mood within your area.
No, it's the thing about living, it's not absolutely splendid isolation, but there's not that many people here.
Right.
And like real country, it's a community feeling. Nobody bothers with masks and stuff. We know each other and we trust each other not to go anywhere where there's infection.
Yeah. Okay. So, but I mean, generally, what was it like, say, with the local community? I mean, you in your area, there are some kind of non-French people. So were people kind of going with the flow, or was there a general form of kind of disinformation and so on?
Well, yeah, you know, the what do they call them? Oh, yes, English, those people.
Didn't want to go down that road.
they really got their tails in a twist, I tell you. A few Dutch people were freaking out as well.
But overall, no, overall, it was much. it was just business as usual for people like yourself.
Yeah, generally, yeah.
Francis, of course, you were in a massive European city, Paris, and we spoke back in March. We had a kind of an in-depth discussion with Roger Casale and Dominique Rock, and yourself. We were in the early stages of lockdown at that point, so there was nobody was really sure how it was going to work out. But looking back on that now, what are your general feelings about the year?
Oh, well, we've more or less survived, I think. I'm in a very fortunate situation in that I've always worked at home anyhow. So my revenues weren't affected, really. I'm very, very lucky, and I count myself so. I worry a lot about people, families in particular, who have found their revenues drying up, and I worry about the effect that's having on inequality and the political consequences that we'll see 2 or 3 years down the track. Those are my worries. If something keeps me awake at night, it's that and climate change. But for myself, I got through. I found out I'm much more adaptable than I ever thought I was, which really is a surprise. Events available online that normally in the real life I wouldn't be able to get to, but I found myself participating in things that interesting things that frankly I was very, very glad of. And the other thing, of course, was that some fantastic humor came out of this. Some of the jokes, and oh, laugh did we about that, and they seem to be coming out every day in great, great waves of fantastic jokes about things. So we were laughing at life a lot.
Yep.
And of course, the other thing that was still going on during the year was, of course, U.S. politics, and of course, that kept us alive and interested in things.
Kept us laughing too, in some ways.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny you mentioned that. Yeah. We're gonna tackle that subject right now, because I think it's the elephant in the room, one with blonde hair, it's kind of going grey now. I think at this moment, I think he's kind of decided the yellow is not working for him.
That's it.
So yeah. we've always had this election. It's been kind of coming looming over the hill for the last 4 years. Never mind the last couple of months. There was so much trepidation, excitement, worry. I mean, everyone was kind of on their knees and on biting their nails. And at the end of the day, he did exactly, as in Trump, he did exactly what people said he would do and what he said he would do. And that was to stand up the very, 3 hours into the election count and say, it's not working. It's a fraud. We need to stop
fake.
The election.
Yeah.
Game over. And, you know, he's still there to this day. Going on about it, saying that it's a fraud. So, Brian, I want to start with you. Brian, what's your overall thoughts of this election? Do you think it's been great fun, or is it something that we should be a little bit more serious about?
Well, we definitely should be a bit more serious about it. I mean, I've laughed my head off, I must admit. It's upset what is supposed to be USA democracy. It's made democracy look very fragile.
And do you think that U.S. democracy is the magnet for democracy around the world? Or do you think that it's not that important in a grander scale?
Well, you know, I mean, I wrote on it. I don't think the USA particularly loves democracy. It's got some characteristics like elections, and they're supposed to be democratic. Unfortunately, it's exposed the wounds there, the people who were excluded, the attempts to exclude people, And they've got a lot of work to do to convince the world they're democratic.
Yeah.
They've lost a lot of their credentials there.
Francis, what about you? I mean, you've been looking at this election a lot as well for the last couple of months. I mean, do you think that there is a situation that we should be aware of? In other words, we should be more concerned about it? Or is Joe Biden the savior that people say he is?
I think he's a reprieve. Right. And should be seen as that, a breathing space of 4 years. Populism hasn't gone away, and it won't anytime soon. We could spend the whole hour talking just about that, so I won't go into that any further.
Yeah, well, we'll probably do something in January, actually, just around the inauguration. That might be the best time to do.
What I would say, very, very quickly, is that Trump now is started to prime himself to run again in 2024. Now, that could be good news. To start with, it stops him from grooming one of his progeny, not that any of his progeny are particularly gifted. Where would they get the gifts from after all? But while he's not grooming somebody fresh to take his place, and Trump keeps on ranting, now, eventually, he's going to turn some people off, even amongst his supporters.
Yeah.
Because he's bound to become more and more hysterical as he gets on. And that may put him in a very poor position in 2024. And nobody else, the Republicans, won't have had a chance to come up with anybody else to challenge him. So that could turn out to be a good thing. Never say that I run out of optimism. I'm a perpetual optimist.
Stella, you were watching. I know you're a freak for these. What
I
did you think
am,
of the overall
I
election?
I am. As I say, when Obama was elected, I stayed up all night to watch it and I cried. And when Trump was elected, I stayed up
all
night.
Yeah, no, you never stopped texting me.
No, and I stayed up all night and I cried that night too, or that morning. So I did. I stayed up and, as I said, like most people who are watching John King on CNN, I still want to know what's happening in Maricopa County and Allegheny County and all these kind of places. One thing that just makes me revile Trump so much is this element of grifting and preying on his supporters. You know, since the end of the election, he has raised over $200 million, supposedly to kind of fight these fake results of this fraudulent election result. You know, I think all 30 of his applications have been thrown out as false, because of course they're false. But the problem is, as someone said, whether he uses that towards a 2024 run, as Francis has mentioned, or whether, as someone said, if he keeps going, by the end of January, he will have his $400 million personal debt paid off. And he can go off and play golf and kind of go, thank you very much, and give the proverbial two fingers to the American people. So you just kind of go, the legacy that he has created, there's nothing that can redeem him. And that whole financial thing, I just find vile.
Yeah, and it's crazy. And he gets like these mad people to go public.
Yes.
And make a complete show of themselves.
Looking
like
we at
had
you,
this
Rudy
woman,
Giuliani.
This woman... We had this woman, what's her name, Melissa Carone.
I'm gonna
try and find the actual the piece of her here. I think I have it here, so hopefully we can just let this run for a second. Hang on a second.
The poll book is completely off. Completely off.
Off that by 30,000?
I'd say that poll book is off by over 100,000. That poll book? Why don't you look at the registered voters on there? How many registered voters are on there? Do you even know the answer to that?
No, I guess I'm trying to get to the bottom of this here.
Zero. There's zero.
So my question then is, if the...
Guess how many... Wait. What about the turnout rate? 120%?
Oh, God.
As someone said, it's like the drunk girl who comes to a party and just won't go home.
Oh, God. 100,000.
Saturday Night Live did a sketch on her last night, and it was, you know, as if they didn't need to write a script for it, which is weird because it was funny except for the fact that it was real life. There you go.
Yeah, actually, that's the truth.
Yeah.
I think we'll say that. Look, we all wish Joe Biden the best. I think that's the real thing, isn't it? And look, at the end of the day, as well with Miss Harris as well, is a wonderful opportunity for them to build something, you know, that can bring back a normal America. It's not about making America great again. It's about making America normal again.
I know. As I said, I'm very happy to have my politicians boring and in grey suits and, you know, I have nothing to say about them.
They need a couple of weeks in a room with Simon Coveney. He just, you know, he'd em them into you know, normal. They'd come out going, Jesus, that's what life is all about.
And that's
okay, I feel much better now.
Because Simon Coveney is doing a great job, you know. So, that's it.
Yes, no, I'm not putting him down. I'm just saying he would normalize them, you know.
Completely.
He'd like press that normalize button and that would be it. Everything would be just fine.
And brave. But
okay. Speaking of things that are not fine, I'm going to go to you, Francis. You're going to be our specialist on this, okay? Everyone's going to sit back and just listen to you because you know you've got this one. The UK-EU trade deal.
She's got it more than Boris.
Now, listen, you have a choice. You have a choice, Francis, right? You have a choice, okay? Discovering life in the universe, right? Or negotiating the EU trade deal. So which one would you like to pick?
All right, I'll go for the Sky Pilot.
Ticket to Mars.
Now
huh?
then, yeah. Now, listen. There's a German. The Germans have a word for this. It's called Schadenfreude, and it's taking pleasure from other people's suffering. It's a very unattractive trait, but so tempting. Now then, I've always
you have
thought,
5 minutes.
Okay, thank
your
you.
Specialized so, subject.
I've always thought Boris was always aiming for a no deal anyway, because he has a lot of money in hedge funds. A lot of his mates are hedge fund managers, and they're going to make an absolute killing from the chaos that will ensue from no deal. So him and his mates stand to make an awful lot of money out of this, while ordinary Britons suffer atrociously, and some really, really badly, usually those who can least afford to suffer. That's how the world works. Now, huge economic damage, we know. But we thought we'd analysed everything and we knew where all the damage was coming from, but no, new little tidbits keep trickling in on us. Like, for example, last week, it turned out nobody thought about VAT receipts. Now, a lot of people, especially rich Asians and Arabs, when they travel, when they do travel again, which they will, quite often they go to Britain. Why do they go to London and other parts of Britain? Partly to shop. They go to see the Queen, yes, but they also go to shop. Now, shopping becomes a lot less attractive if you can't get your VAT refunded. And it turns out Britain had this idea that they could refund the Asians and Arabs, but they couldn't refund Europeans. And, of course, it turns out that's not true. They have to refund everybody's VAT, well, they don't refund anybody's VAT. So they did their sums, and it turns out less bad not to refund any VAT. So none of those Asians and Arabs are going to go to London now. They'll go to Paris and Milan to do exactly the same shopping, and guess what?
Yep.
So these are little things, and things like this are going to keep coming in over the next few years. We won't know the real damage of Brexit for at least another 3 or 4 years. And that's how economics works. However,
but just to jump in, because obviously we can go into it really, really deeply. Are we going to get a deal before 2021?
My money is that we won't.
So what happens?
This leads on to the other big point, actually. They will fall back on World Trade Organization rules, which served Britain actually quite badly, contrary to what Boris says, because they don't actually accommodate financial services very well, which are 40% of Britain's exports. A lot more once you rule out the tourist dollars, pounds rather. Now, Biden's election has in some ways thrown a spanner in the works for Boris, because Boris needs a trade deal with the US. He needs it economically, obviously. He's got to have a trade deal with a big economy to replace the one he's lost with the EU. But he also needs it politically. He needs to wave around and say, look, we've got a trade deal with the US, look, the EU, which the EU were unable to do. Now, Biden has said, oh, yes, but you've got to respect your agreement with the EU, especially with regard to the Northern Ireland and Republic of Ireland border. So he can't just walk away from that and tear it up as if it were a piece of paper, because Biden will say, no, 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 you've got to. Otherwise, we won't do a deal. Yet, Biden's election was generally not a good thing for Boris, but in one small respect, it was in some ways a blessing. And that small way is that Britain will almost certainly, in my view, certainly, fall back onto World Trade Organization rules as of the 1st of January. But under Trump, the World Trade Organization was not functional because Trump had gutted it, as he does most multilateral institutions. Mm-hmm. Biden will repair it. So the World Trade Organization will function again properly, and that will work in Boris's favor. Not very much. It's a very small little factor going in their favor, but it's in their favor. So personally, Boris and his mates are going to do very well. Britain will probably do quite badly, as most economists have said. Central bankers universally, and as events like the news, like the VAT receipts thing, not all will get reported, but they will all have their bearing on the economy.
Okay, so at the end of the day, we're going to look at 2021 and say, oh, it's the same old, and I suppose this brings us to the next question, because. And this is where Brian is going to come in, because Brian is indeed our resident expert. Scotland is looking at all this, Brian, very, very carefully, and they're going, okay, your move, what's our move? What is their move, Brian? What's going to happen in 2021? Do you think there's going to be a referendum called legal or illegal?
I think yes. Whether it's actually held in 2021 is another question. That's just a question of organisation. After the May election, it will be said that there will be a referendum, whether they like it in Westminster or not. That is a demand within the SNP at the moment by the majority, and enough of the population support that, and it's an almost inevitable outcome. What the consequence of that referendum will be is going to be another question, because obviously if Boris is still there, he's going to say no, no, no. And I don't think that's going to make it very easy for the separation. But what it's going to make, and here I laugh and I get great pleasure, because it's going to make it into a very dirty separation. Mm-hmm. I'm old enough to remember Rhodesia declaring UDI and becoming Zimbabwe. And they don't want to have that in what is the United Kingdom, on the island of Great Britain, but they are almost forcing it. It is a possibility. It's not a desirable one, but for all of that, it is a possibility.
Just on what Brian was saying there, I think... Yep. What Scotland are, you know, Scotland's leadership is under Nicola Sturgeon is in stark contrast to that of Westminster and the chaos and self-serving nature of Johnson and his government. I mean, Sturgeon is straight down the middle with her policies, with what she says with the SNP and so forth. So there's a great clarity in their in the leadership on that side of Hadrian's Wall. So it's a it's interesting to see what will transpire.
Francis, you're kind elections. Sorry, Stella, jumping in on you there. Francis, you are kind of looking at that from a continental point of view. Is there a lot of talk in Scotland about that?
In Europe, I'm not hearing any. It will be a difficult one, because Scotland voted quite decisively to stay in the EU. And their argument, as Brian will tell you, is that their 2014 referendum was on the basis of a completely different world. They have always assumed that they would be able to join the EU as a separate country. Now, while Britain was part of the EU wouldn't have had that because they didn't want to encourage places like Catalonia from secession. However, I'm not sure what their position will be now that Britain has harumphed out of the EU, leaving Scotland stranded in a way. If Scotland does declare itself independent, which is indeed a possibility, then the EU might say, well, you know, we really should take this seriously. And if that happens, where does that leave Northern Ireland and Wales?
Ooh, your move, Stella.
You'd have to see that as sort of a potential breakup of the United Kingdom or Great Britain and Northern Ireland as such. And, you know, I suppose living in Dublin and you and I, Ken, would have ear to the ground in terms of Irish politics and Irish opinions on unity or so forth. You know, I'm not sure that there is an appetite right at the moment for a border poll. You know, I think as our Taoiseach, our Prime Minister has said, these sort of anything that would be look at unity of the island of Ireland down the line would have to be done in conjunction with, you know, cross-party talks, with cross-community talks, with, you know, with all sorts of things like that. It's not just a case of, lads, let's just have a vote, yeah, grand, and you sort of either, if you win, you subsume the unionist community, and if you don't, then you, that would just be too messy. So while it would leave Northern Ireland stranded, and to a lesser extent Wales, which I don't think has an appetite or hasn't got an issue with independence the way Scotland would have, and the issue of identity, I suppose, in Northern Ireland as opposed to independence. But it would certainly leave it at a very fraught sort of temperature, I would think.
I don't really want to make this a discussion on Northern Ireland because there's nothing really happening in Europe, in Northern Ireland that can maybe have an effect on Northern Ireland. And I think what I don't know whether Stella you'll agree with me on this. I think that what happens in Scotland will not affect Northern Ireland. I don't think people in Northern Ireland are going to look at Scotland and say, you know, have some sort of domino effect with regards to any kind of independence or any kind of union with Ireland. And just the second thing I will say, the second thing I will say is that I have a personal opinion about it and I don't want to go into too much detail, but I do think that we should not think about unity of this island simply because the British, or sorry, we say maybe in this case the English, are kind of messing up themselves on a domestic scale. It should be done when the people want it, not because we're being forced to rewrite the society yet again on the island of Ireland. And that's what we're being asked to do here with Brexit. Yeah, we're actually being asked to rewrite society. Now, for Scotland, That's an advantage. But I think for Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland, I think that's a serious disadvantage. But that's all I'm going to say on that, because it's about Scotland now.
Sure, but just one thing to add on that, I suppose, but the breakup of the United Kingdom, does that then leave the rest of the countries without an or as such? Because does not the United Kingdom cease to exist if one of the four constituent members breaks away? I'm not sure of the answer.
Here's a suggestion.
You might know, Francis.
Yeah, here's a suggestion. I think Britain should stay in the EU and England should leave Britain.
Yes.
Brian, your two cents on this, because I know you had to just run off there for a second. So,
I think to end the Northern Ireland, if Northern Ireland was to do anything, that would encourage Scotland to do something. Going in the opposite direction, I think Scotland breaking away from the United Kingdom will have no influence whatsoever on Northern Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a question of how it happens and what the knock-on is. My wife knows the First Minister of Wales because he used to be a colleague. He has no appetite whatsoever, and Labour in general have no appetite for the breakup of the United Kingdom. And Wales is stuck with England, whatever. The other question is, though, if Scotland leaves the United Kingdom, does the United Kingdom still exist? Well, given that it's a set of treaties, that Ireland has already left the 1800 one, and if Scotland was to leave the 1707 Act of Union, which is a treaty, then the United Kingdom as such would cease to exist. It would be England and Wales. They would have to rename themselves. And it's as simple as that. At the moment with Europe, as a final note, somebody has said in the last 2 days, my informants tell me, that the Commission would be in favour of fast-tracking Scotland back into the EU.
Yeah. And if I can just say, if I could just say one thing, I will go back to this, and I think this is crucial. Scotland should leave, if Scotland chooses to leave this union, as you call it, they should do it for the right reasons. They shouldn't do it for Brexit. They should do it because they want to be an independent sovereign state and that they want to join the nations of Europe. I don't think they should do it because of Brexit.
No, no,
I certainly
no,
don't
no.
think that Ireland should become a united island because of Brexit, because that's rushing things.
And it doesn't address the underlying issues of hundreds of years that need.
It's certainly it's a knee jerk problem that happened with Yugoslavia. It happened in Eastern Europe. Now, we're not going to say that the issues that arose from those points in history are going to be as dramatic as what happened there. But, you know, we could have it on a softer way, but it could still be as damaging to societies. So what's happening is they need to think about it. Yeah, they need to think of it. They need to take a step back, a deep breath, and say, they need to be done for the real reasons. And it certainly shouldn't be done because of another cock-up in Westminster. Because that's what it is. It's a massive cock-up. And now they're kind of saying, "Ooh, wash your hands." And they're hoping that this is going to happen really in the back of their minds. Because, you know, England is England, and I think they'd be happy with that. But as I said, that's just my 2 cents. Look, we can do this for all night. So we're going to go on, I think, a little bit, I'm trying to keep the mood the same, but kind of bring it up a little bit. So we're going to go into the back straight now of the track. The hair is ahead of us, but we're catching up on it. So just this, the last kind of which I would prefer that we didn't discuss this, but I suppose we really need to. I'm going to come back to you, Francis, on this, because I know this is a big thing for you. I suppose we have to talk about populism, because populism is an issue that has been rearing its ugly head for quite a while. So what are your overall opinions on populism? Has it risen? Has it fallen? What do you think?
It's there. Trump was a torchbearer for it. Yes, he hasn't gone away. And populism definitely hasn't gone away. It may be waning. At the moment, populism relies on people's emotions. People find it easier to decide things on basis of their emotions. Oh, that guy feels like me. I identify with that guy. I like him. I'll vote for him. And the issues and reasoning just don't come into it. They're too hard. We'll just vote for, you know, whoever we think is a good bloke. Now, it's not gone away, and it won't anytime. I would argue it never did. It just was subsumed by the good times of the 50s, 60s, and 70s, 50s and 60s at least. Spotlights on the EU. The EU is resisting it and doing a very fine job. And the EU is a funny animal, whereas crises are usually menacing to most democracies. The EU seems to thrive on it. And how it deals with Hungary and Poland right now is going to do enormous things for its credibility, and it's dealing very well. Populism hasn't gone away at all.
We can't combat, though, can we? I mean, we can just kind of monitor it and kind of go against it and offer alternatives that will appeal to the masses, but we can never get rid of it.
The hard thing is, of course, as I said, that people of voting on the basis of emotions, not any reasoned arguments. And so combating populism with reasonable arguments turns out not to be very easy at all. A quixotic sort of task. I'm not sure what the answer is. If I had the answer, then thousands of other people smarter than I am would have the answer as well. The organisation that, in my view, that is doing the best job of anybody to combat populism, as I said, the EU. and it's laudable. Whatever you want to say about them, you might not like them for all their flaws, but they are getting quite a few things quite right. We're going to have to live with it, and we're going to have to keep batting it away as best we can, so as to preserve democracy and the benefits that brings to everybody. Mm-hmm.
Sorry, Stella, go ahead, jump in.
I was just going to jump in there because it's just so interesting what you're saying, Francis, and the idea that people are voting with emotion. But somewhere that seems to have cottoned onto that idea, but that has a very centre-left politician, but who is thriving on emotion, but doing a really good job, is New Zealand with Jacinda Ardern. She has become almost populist in not in the sort of the political populist sense, but she's become very, very popular, and she's kind and she's empathetic and she's larger than life. And she's sort of similar to those larger than life politicians that are in America, in Brazil, you know, Orban and in Hungary and so forth. But yes, she's doing a good job. I wonder, is it that you can just get larger than life characters who are in positions of centrist politics and have them? I don't know. It just seems that has just been one position that stood out to me, where she's a popular leader and people are voting with emotion because they say, oh, she's great, she's this, she's wonderful. You know, she's still a Labour politician who I'm sure has all those type of policies, but yet she was voted for almost as a personality. But in her case, it's a good thing because she is a beacon of light and of hope and of empathy for the world.
She's you're not allowed to say anything bad about Jacinda.
That's true. You'd be cancelled.
You're an ogre. So I'm going to say that I think she's not all that great. I can see why people like her.
Yeah.
And she seems to have managed the COVID-19 crisis extremely well. They haven't had a case there for ages. That doesn't mean they won't have any. But she's not done that well on the rest of the economy, etc. And eventually those chickens will come home to roost, I suppose. Mm. Listen, she's in a way a populist. But she's a benign,
a benevolent one.
She's a benevolent one, exactly. Mm. Benign, at least, and benevolent, I would say. So she's doing a very fine job for the moment. So let us hope that she continues to do, and when the challenge changes for New Zealand, that she rises to the new challenge. And time will tell whether she does or not.
Brian, just a quick word from you on populism. You've seen a few different versions of that. What's your opinion on the current wave of populism that seems to be running across, not just Europe, but in the world as well?
Well, it's a very, very interesting question for people who look at it closely. Today, it's just a continuum. There has never been a break in populism since roughly the 1920s. Mm-hmm. We can even, if we look at it in its purest definitions, Stalinism, Maoism are also populism when we take the definition very literally. So when we actually look at it, we have, let's say, 196 nations recognized in this world. More than 60 of them have populist governments. So yeah, it's an enormous problem worldwide for those who find populism a problem. Unfortunately, not enough do. However, it does appear to be stagnating. As Francis says, it's not going away, and I doubt it ever will, but it's stagnating. Even Bolsonaro is running out of ideas and popularity at the moment, but the likelihood is somebody who's equally populist will replace him.
Yeah, that's the problem. It's the end of the day. Is it just to, as I said, just to keep monitoring it and just to hit them with, you know, facts and you know, alternative ways of presenting, say, good form of government?
I think, and again, I agree with Francis about the EU, only I think people have got to watch the EU because it would be very easy to drift into populism to keep the momentum going.
So, for 2020, everybody, because we're going to look at, say, a little bit more lighthearted from here on in. But just for 2020, are we looking at a more positive year? Because I suppose naturally it's going to have to be a positive year, isn't it? Starting with you, Stella.
For our 2021, yes.
Sorry, 2021, yes. Yeah. I'm stuck in this year.
I know, with the vortex of 2020. Yes, I do believe so. I mean, COVID has obviously been the mantra, you know, the word that has blighted everything this year, from health to finances to work to mental health, all sorts of things. So I just think it cannot, because now we sort of have the light at the end of the tunnel in terms of possible vaccines and better management and better knowledge about it, it can only get better going into 2021. It might take a while for, you know, countries are all going to be on their knees, but the whole world is on its knees. So we're all going to have to figure out something together. And that's way above my pay grade.
Yeah.
I would hope, you know, with vaccines and so forth, that people can get out and about a little bit more, that an element of humanity will start coming back into everybody. I know I found, you get a bit like you, Francis, you adapt quite well eventually to, you know, having your own company and not going out to catch up with friends or going to movies or going out for meals and so forth. But I think we're all the better for being able to do those things. So in a nutshell, I think, yes, it could take a while. It may not be in January, February, but I think overall we'll all come together and it will be a far better year in 2021. Like Francis, I'm an optimist.
Francis, Notre Dame is being rebuilt. People are letting their hair down. The sun is shining. The wine is flowing. And we've all got a stab in our arms. What's it going to be like?
I'm not so sure about the sun. Not right yet anyway, but the rest of it. Now I am optimistic. Well, I'm always a bit optimistic, I'm afraid, but I am. As Stella pointed out, not only are we seeing things get a little bit better with COVID, we hope that continues to be the case. The development of the vaccines showed that how we can accelerate technological developments when they're needed very, very, very badly. Now, it turns out those vaccines were developed quick smart because they knew they had a guaranteed customer for them. Mm-hmm. So they had guaranteed buyers, and so they raised money to fund the research. This is about the most important thing that we learned in 2020 from this. And if we cut and paste that lesson onto much needed technology to combat climate change, then we could find ourselves in good shape. Again, the EU responding to crisis does it anything else, I think, is really getting its act together about investing to combat climate change. And it's showing leadership for the rest of the world where the EU goes in this sense. California follows, and once California follows, everybody else gets on the bandwagon without much delay. So in those senses, I'm fairly optimistic about next year.
Brian, we're going to get on. Is the harvest going to be good?
Our harvest, we have a hay field. The farmer's quite happy with that. So as long as that works, I'm quite happy as well.
as a metaphor for 2021, though.
Well, yeah. I mean, we get up to 42 degrees here in the summer, so it might go very badly wrong. I can go with Francis about the climate change. Environmental issues in general, I think we've got to turn the attention of politicians seriously to it. Again, it's a thing that's got to come from the people. Yeah. People have got to start taking it seriously, and it's not somebody else's business to deal with. So in a way, and I suppose we've got to be part of this, public education is one of the most important things. And I think it's a very positive thing we should look at for 2021. Getting rid of some of the ignorance in the world. And we just talked about populism. Populism thrives on ignorance. And somehow we've got to take a positive view and kill that.
I also want to discuss the fact that life has changed for people in sense that they've obviously spent a lot of time at home and they have kind of got closer to families. Even in a local, like where I am, people have talked about, oh, I've got to spend more time with their kids. And also a lot more people are working at home. I mean, will we see, Stella, maybe I can ask you because you're self-employed and you know, do you think a lot of people will kind of stick to the routine of working at home? Or do you think it'll be, let's get back to the office as quick as possible and let's kind of get back to the norm?
For me, my office is in the venue that I'm sort of playing. So I probably don't have a choice, which means that my work has kind of not really happened this year, but that's by the by. I probably think there will be a mix. There will be people for whom the office is a haven of activity. They're more productive there, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They like kind of getting out and about. They feel there's more benefit from being working closely with colleagues and so forth. And yet you also say the argument where the increase in use of Zoom, of WebEx and so forth, or sort of the more general use of it has made a lot of work more efficient because, you know, people can kind of just look at a Zoom call for 20 minutes, do what they need to do, then get on with it rather than having to fly people in from here, then everywhere and so forth. So I don't know. I'd say you'll find a mix. There may be people who will have an option of working part-time remotely, part-time in the office, or sort of maybe two days and three or something like that. Yeah. I don't know. That remains to be seen. But it's the fact that it has proved to be doable, I'd say, will open up lots of conversations for businesses and employers.
I have one for you, right? You're in the entertainment industry, Stella, right? Now, not directly connected, but you've been involved with radio and television and so on. The big question that I would like to talk about this year, in particular, Netflix and its kind of co-conspirators in the form of Hulu, Disney, which kind of came on to your big time this year. Tell me about it. I have two young kids, and Amazon Prime to a less extent. All of those guys against the traditional cinema and people going to the cinema. Now, are people missing cinema now? Will they croak back into the cinema?
That's very interesting because I just was reading yesterday. I think it was Warner Brothers are going to be releasing on the same day all their new movies to cinema on the same day they're going to release them online. So that's mind-blowing in the world of cinema, where you only ever get that 6 months or 3 months or a year later. I'm never sure of the timeline. So that is perhaps is that the studios waving a white flag, kind of going, right, this is the way it's going to go. And the fact that, I mean, I think for quite a while, I mean, I must confess I don't have Netflix, but I think for quite a while, TV has become the new movie for actors, in a sense that you've got all the A-list Hollywood, you know, quote unquote, actors, movie actors are now doing their thing in really, really well-written and well-produced TV shows. And so I wonder, will cinema suffer a double whammy in a sense that, okay, everybody's always going to want to do a nice movie, but are they going to become a little bit subservient to TV?
Yeah.
Because all the money seems to be now going into TV.
Yeah, and it's a question for the future, I think, because people need to be looking at it and saying, well, what do they prefer? Do they prefer the overall movie experience, or do they prefer just to actually see the film?
Yes.
And that's the thing, you know, because televisions have obviously developed, they become bigger, there's a surround sound at home and all that kind of thing, but do people just like to get out of the house and maybe sit and watch a movie in a cinema environment? So it's a big thing. But like going to something slightly connected to that is sport. Now, Stella, you've been winding up to talk to us about this one because I know you're a big fan of sport, but sport has been weird this year, hasn't it?
Sport has. I'm a massive sports fan. As I said, give me going to a game any day over buying a pair of shoes. But there you go. For me, a personal highlight as a lifelong Liverpool fan, Liverpool finally won the league after 30 years. But there you go. Brian's going to chime in here any second now. I know. Of course, sport looked fine at the beginning of the year when we knew nothing about what would the rest of the year, what would befall us the rest of the year. And but it was really only March, late February, March, that it impacted in Europe for any rugby fans. Of course, the Six Nations was cancelled. Then there was murmurings, would the Olympics go ahead? Of course it will, of course it will. Oh, no, it's not. And the Olympics and the Paralympics then push into next year, as is the European, the Euro 2020 Football Championships, which I'm based in Dublin. Of course, Dublin was a host city for the first time ever. So, but again, that's been pushed into 2021. They managed, of course, then sport realized, okay, we can do this safely and just not have the crowds. So then they were able to do that. And most, all the events then realized, okay, we can do these, but do them safely. But of course, then that led to the very, very funny spectacle of the automated crowds, which for the first couple of times, there was goals scored and there was boos and hisses. And then there was randomly just crowd cheering in the middle of nothing, you know. But very quickly, the guys and gals who were doing that got it right. And it's certainly from the point of view of a punter watching sports, it's been nice to see. It does add a little bit of atmosphere and so forth. But yeah, most of the championships and, you know, sport, I mean, the golf, the green jacket was done, the Masters a couple of weeks ago, all the tennis events, bar Wimbledon happened. And the in England and all the leagues around Europe were able to kind of fulfill their fixtures and so forth. And now they're starting to let some crowds back in. So again, it's tiptoes of sort of green shoots into back to normality. We lost a few people as well this year in sport, which is quite sad. And I suppose just thinking at the top of the year, you know, again, before, and it seems like a million years ago, of course, one of the greatest American sports superstars, Kobe Bryant, was killed in that helicopter. But that was way back in January. That seems like about 200 years ago at this stage. And then, of course, to bookend that, of course, we lost Diego Maradona, one of the greats, only in the last week or so. And from an Irish perspective, in the 80s and 90s, passed away. That was Jack Charlton and his sidekick, Morris Setters. So that was kind of quite sad. It was just certainly the end of an era. So that was sport for me, I think. And also another highlight was Marcus Rashford, the Manchester United, an England footballer who at 22 has been lobbying the British government and helping, you know, underprivileged or, you know, impoverished kids in England. And I kind of look back to what I was doing at 21, and okay, I didn't have the same platform, the same money and so forth, but my goodness, what a great young man he is. And that certainly stood out to me as a great humanitarian in the making, even though he plays for Manchester United, but we let that one go.
Just one last thing I wanted to delve on. Do you think that major sports are on the verge of bankruptcy, or have they been saved from the brink?
That I don't know. I guess we're going to have to see. You know, it's like as if the whole world is in debt to, I don't know to whom. I don't know who the whole world now owes money to. But I just say whoever it is just needs to cancel that debt again. But so I don't know whether sport is going to fall in, because I assume advertising revenues and TV revenues fell by the wayside. So goodness knows how the finances are going to be of all these sports organizations. But again, I'd say when the clouds lift or when the clouds part, we'll get a better idea of when people can start to breathe again and kind of go, okay, how are we now that we're through all this? Let's regroup and see what the heck has gone on in the last 6 months, a year. How are we fixed financially and so forth?
Yeah, there's just one last thing which I found very interesting from watching the developments of how sport handled such a thing as this, is that there were some sports that just didn't matter to them really in terms of the spectator impact. And then there were other sports that were just, within the space of weeks, were in a dire situation. And they were the one sports that you would expect to be able to have a better, to hold out a little bit longer, didn't. And then the other sports that you didn't expect to hold out so long did. And I thought that was strange. You know, like, say, for example, football, very precarious, very quickly. You know, people were talking about clubs going bankrupt. Formula One, ducks back, water off a duck's back, didn't care less. If the fans want to come along, we don't care. You know, and this is the thing, you know. I think what it showed that some sports need spectators, some sports, come along if you like, sort of thing. You know, because obviously the money is transferred and worked around differently. So I think what the pandemic has showed is that sport is run differently in different sports, very differently.
Also, All sports are equal, but some are more equal than others. Is that right?
Exactly.
And I think it's probably no coincidence that the likes of Formula One, they were able to kind of sort of, they had multiple races in the same destinations kind of week after week, just to minimize the travel and so forth. But the amount of them that were in the Middle East, in Bahrain and in Dubai and so forth, where there's a heck of a lara money, I think that is no coincidence. But look, you know, you sort of see someone like Lewis Hamilton as, you know, one of the greatest drivers of all time. And, you know, he's certainly a good role model. For an
old dog like me now, you know, Lewis Hamilton's still a young buck, has yet to prove himself. So.
he's only got the same number of championships as Schumacher. But what has he got to prove?
But he didn't have to drive around after with five whiskeys, you know. And you know, and all those good looking girls after a party night, like good old James Hunt did, you know. So.
I know. Except back in those days, none of that went up onto Instagram, you know. So they could party on the QT.
I recently did a podcast with a racing driver from the 1980s. Oh, there was a lot of stories I had to cut out from that podcast. I should have done a nightlife version of that, you know. Those were the days, that's all I can say. I don't know how they got up the next morning and raced for 24 hours. But then again, they were the original 24-hour party people, I can tell you that.
And the Jimmy Whites, the Alex Higgins, all these boys who were geniuses and still managed to kind of pull out the results.
Big time, absolutely. So look, we're going to finish up with the podcast. I just want to do one thing. I want to give a big shout out to everybody who contributed to Europa United in 2021. I'm already going to the next one. 2020. It was so important that you were able to give us the work that you do. We really appreciate it. And please keep sending in your articles. And also, I want to say thank you to, of course, you three, Brian, Stella, and Francis, for working so hard this year. And big thanks to Christos and to all the others who are participating with us throughout the couple of months, who have helped us out.
And a big thanks to you as well, Ken Sweeney, who's keeping us all in check.
I'm still taking the drugs, yeah, absolutely. I'm still taking the blue pill. I'm being weaned off it, as you can see. You know, 4 years ago I was much more patriotic. Now I'm taking the pills that Brian's on. It's called sarcasm. I think I'm just getting older as well, you know. It's like, you know, people are saying, do you want to take your photograph with you wearing the European Union t-shirt? No, it's okay. I'm too fat for it now, you know. it's been great fun, you know. It's like, I feel like I'm dying. It's great fun. We have some new plans for next year, and I think we're going to revamp it. Mark 2, Europa United Mark 2.
Bigger and better coming at you.
Yeah. And look, as well, there's one important thing. I want to say thank you to all our guests in our podcast, because it takes a bit of time for people to line up and do all that. And we had some really great guests. We had some, you know, you and I know that we had some great fun with them. They were so obliging to take all the time. So out there, you know.
I would like to say we had some real spacers. But that's only because they were actually astronauts and actual people who knew about the cosmos and so. So when I use the term spacers, they actually were space people.
Yeah, it's nice to get genuine spacers.
Yeah.
Maybe we should do that next year. Maybe we should just have a right-wing podcast, and just for the laugh, we get Brian to do the interviewing and we just see how that goes. just leave them alone and just put a microphone in the table and just... how it goes.
I can already see the puffs of smoke arising from Brian.
Brian, we could just put you in. We could put you there and just let you go full Scott. That would be.
No, the language would not be broadcastable.
It's okay, Brian. If you went full Scott, they wouldn't understand you anyway. So. Oh, listen, guys, we've got about 5 minutes. So what I want to do is, Christmas is nearly here upon us. And of course, the lonely half brother, the evil twin of Christmas is always New Year's. So what is our predictions for 2021? My prediction for 2021, right, is that we're going to end up getting the vaccine, okay? And then they're going to charge us for it. That's we're all going to get an invoice for every single person. We're going to be charged for it. So that's my prediction for 2021. It's not going to be free. And Trump was right. Francis, what's your predictions for 2021?
Okay, I think there's going to be a glut of secondhand home exercise bikes for sale. So, there's going to be some bargains coming up there.
My other prediction, by the way, is Stella will eventually get Netflix.
Or maybe Stella will actually eventually get a gig. After all my work being cleaned out, there could be. That's it. I'm going to say there's going to be a glut of weddings in 2021.
Yes.
Because everybody that is postponed in 2020 is going to. So it's this. Oh, you're going to see confetti. Confetti is going to be the new polluter in the world. Yeah, the new kind of threat to climate change. Wedding confetti.
and probably a glut of babies as well, too. We won't go down that road.
We won't go down that road, no.
Brian, predictions for 2021?
Well, actually, you've just said it. I think there's going to be a population explosion. And it's going to cause a lot of unexpected weddings.
Great, give them my card, I'm available.
Yeah, there's a term for that. I don't think we'll mention it, but it involves the use of firearms.
Yeah. Prediction is that satire will satire as the prime sense of humor will come back right
yes,
into the
absolutely.
I hope so, yes.
That's brilliant, Brian. We should champion that. We should champion the rise
absolutely.
Of satire.
And are we going to cancel culture?
Yeah, that's I think what's also going to happen is I think Ivanka Trump will get her own TV show and she'll be arrested live on TV during the first episode. And
I would sign up to Netflix
TV show ever.
Yes. I would sign up to Netflix for that alone.
What are they going to call it? Return of the Muppets.
Return of the Muppets. Yes. No, God, that's an insult to the Muppets. They were absolutely amazing.
Oh, Lordy. Maybe a rerun of the movie The Grifters. The Grifters.
Yeah, great.
The White House years.
Yeah. I don't know, guys. So, I mean, 2021, it's going to be a funny year, I suppose, no matter what happens. And we will certainly be there. So, look, my thanks to all of you for taking the time out tonight. It's a Sunday. We've all got to be in bed, but we decided not to be. And roll on 2021. And thank you to my crew. Thank you, Francis.
Thank you, Ken.
Thank you, Stella.
Thank you, Ken.
And thank you, Brian.
You're
all
welcome.
The way in the south of France.
Yep.
Brian.
Yes.
2021. Get better broadband, will you?
Yeah.
Okay, guys, you've been listening to, I don't know what episode this is because it's been so long since we did a Europe United podcast because we've all been very busy trying to survive. Anyway, look, take care of yourselves, guys, and we'll see you real soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.